smiling. They could hear Lorela crying as they approached. To Proliva, it sounded like the fussiness of a baby who was overtired and maybe hungry. Lenoga was holding her, trying to settle her down. "Why don't you let me see if she'll nurse a little?" Proliva said to the girl. "I just changed her padding, stuffed it with her nighttime sheep's wool," Lenoga said, handing the toddler to Proliva. When she offered her breast, the baby went for it eagerly. Since her own mother's milk had dried up more than a year before, many other women had taken turns feeding her, and she was used to taking milk from any woman who offered. She also ate different kinds of solid food that Ayla had taught Lenoga to make for her. Considering her difficult beginning, Lorela was a remarkably healthy, happy, gregarious, though somewhat undersized child. The women who fed her took a certain pride in her good health and good nature, knowing that they had contributed to it. Ayla knew that they had kept the baby alive, but Proliva knew it was Ayla's idea originally after she discovered that Tremita's milk had dried up. Ayla, Proliva, and Marthona found some additional skins and furs that they didn't mind giving up for the children to use as sleep coverings and more food. Willemar, Jondalar, and Bolagan collected some wood. The structure was nearly finished when Jondalar noticed Larimar coming. He stopped some ways back and stared at the small summer lodge, frowning.
"Where did this thing come from?"
he asked Bolagan.
"We built it," the boy said.
"You didn't build it by yourselves,"
Larimar said.
"No, we helped him," Jondalar interjected, "since you weren't here to do it, Larimar."
"No one asked you to butt in," Larimar sneered.
"Those children had no place to sleep," Ayla said.
"Where's Tremita? They're her children. She's supposed to see to them,"
Larimar said.
"She left after you did, chasing after you," Jondalar said. "Then she's the one who left them, not me," Larimar said. "They are the children of your hearth. They are your responsibility," Jondalar said with disgust, struggling to contain his anger, "and you left them without shelter."
"They had the traveling tent,"
Larimar said.
"The leather of your traveling tent was rotten. After it got soaked, it fell apart,"
Ayla said.
"They had no food either, and several of them are hardly more than babies."
"I assumed Tremita would get some food for them," Larimar said.
"And you wonder why you are the lowest ranked," Jondalar said, with scorn and a look of disgust.
Wolf was aware that something seriously distressing was going on between the people of his pack and the man that he didn't like. He wrinkled his nose and started growling at Larimar, who jumped back to stay out of his way.
"Who are you to tell me what to do?"
Larimar said. He was now getting defensive.
"I shouldn't be the lowest ranked. It's your fault, Jondalar. You're the one who suddenly came back from a journey with a foreign woman, and you and your mother connived to put her ahead of me? I was born here. She wasn't. She should be the lowest ranked. Some people may think she's special, but anybody who lived with flatheads is not special. She's an abomination, and I'm not the only one who thinks so. I don't have to put up with you, Jondalar, or your insults,"
Larimar said, then turned and stomped off. Ayla and Jondalar looked at each other after Larimar left.
"Is there truth in what he says?"
Ayla asked.
"Should I be ranked lowest because I am a foreigner?"
"No," Willemar said. "You brought your own bride price with you. Your matrimonial outfit alone would put you among those with the highest status in any cave you might choose. But you have also shown yourself to be a worthwhile and valuable person in your own right. Even if you had started out as a low-ranked foreigner, you wouldn't have stayed there for long. Don't let Larimar concern you about your place with us. Everyone knows what his status is, leaving these children alone to fend for themselves with no food or shelter bears it out."
As the builders of the small summer dwelling prepared to return to their own lodge,
Bolagan touched Jandalar's arm. When he turned back, Bolagan looked down, and his face became a deep shade of red, noticeable even in the firelight.
I just want to say, this place is nice. The best summer lodge we ever had, Bolagan said, then quickly went in.
As they were walking back, Willemar said under his breath,
I think Bolagan was trying to thank you, Jandalar. I'm not sure if he's ever thanked anyone before. I'm not sure he knows how.
I think you're right, Willemar, but he did just fine.
The morning dawned clear and bright, and after the morning meal and checking to see that the horses were comfortable, Ayla and Jandalar were eager to go to the main camp to see who was there. Ayla wrapped Janayla in her carrying cloak and settled her on a hip, then signaled Wolf to come with her and set out. It was a bit of a walk, but not bad, Ayla decided, and she did like having a place that was somewhat out of the way when she wanted it. People started hailing them as soon as they appeared, and it pleased Ayla that she recognized so many, unlike the summer before when she hardly knew anyone, and even those she had met, she didn't know well. Though most caves looked forward to seeing certain friends and relatives every year because they regularly changed locations for the summer meetings and other groups of Zelandanyi did the same, there usually was some difference in the mix of caves from year to year that gathered at any particular place. Ayla saw some people that she was sure she had not seen before. They tended to be the ones who stared at Wolf, but the animal was welcomed with a smile or a greeting by many, especially children. He stayed close to Ayla, however, who was carrying the baby for whom he had a special affection. Large groups that included strangers were difficult for him. His instinct to protect his pack had grown more compelling as he matured, and various incidents in his life had reinforced it. In a sense, the ninth cave became his pack, and the territory they inhabited became the area he watched, but he couldn't protect the entire large group, much less the many additional people that Ayla had introduced to him. He had learned not to treat them with hostility, but they were too many to fit into his instinctive conception of a pack. Instead, he decided that the people he knew were close to Ayla were his pack, the ones he was required to protect, especially the new young one he adored. Though she had visited with them shortly before they left, Ayla was especially glad to see Janita with her baby and Lavila. They were talking with Tishona. Marthona had told her that people often formed especially close friendships with the couples with whom they shared their matrimonial, and it was true. She was glad to see all three women, and they all greeted Ayla and Jandalar, embracing each other and touching cheeks. Tishona had become so used to seeing the wolf, she hardly noticed him, but the other two, who still felt a little fear around him, took special pains to greet him, even if they didn't try to touch him. Janita and Ayla fussed over each other's babies, talking about how much they had grown and how wonderful they looked. Ayla noticed that Lavila had also grown.
Lavila, you look like your baby will come any time, Ayla said.
I hope so. I'm ready, Lavila said. Since we're all here, I can come and be with you when you have your baby if you would like. And your sister, Proliva, can be with you, too, Ayla said. And our mother is here. I was so glad to see her. You've met Valima, haven't you? Lavila said.
Yes, Ayla said, but I don't know her well.
Where are Jondakam, Peridol, and Marcheval?
Jandalar asked.
Marcheval went with Soliban to look for an old woman who knows a lot about carving ivory, Tishona said. Jondakam and Peridol were looking for you, Lavila said. They couldn't find you last night.
That's not surprising, since we weren't here last night, Jandalar said.
You weren't, but I saw many people from the ninth cave, Lavila said.
We stayed at our camp, Jandalar said.
Yes, Ayla said. We were helping Bolagan and Lenoga build a summer lodge.
Jandalar felt a twinge of indiscretion on her part when Ayla so openly revealed what he thought of as the confidential problems of their cave. Not that there was anything expressly wrong with talking about them. It was just that he had been raised by a leader and knew how personally most leaders took unresolved situations within their cave that they hadn't been able to settle. Larimar and Tremita had been an embarrassment to the Ninth Cave for some time. Neither Marthona nor Joharan had been able to do much about them. They had lived there many years and had the right to stay. As he suspected, Ayla's statement brought curious queries.
"Bolagan and Lanoga? Aren't they Tremita's children?"
Lavila said.
"Why were you building their summer lodge?"
"Where were Larimar and Tremita?"
Tishona asked.
"They got in a fight. Larimar decided to move to a falage. Tremita went after him, and they didn't return,"
Ayla explained.
"I think I saw her,"
Janita said.
"Where?"
Ayla asked.
"I think she was with some men who were drinking barma and gaming at the edge of the camp, near some of the men's far lodges,"
Janita said. She spoke softly and seemed shy about speaking out. She shifted her baby and looked at him for a moment before she continued.
"There were a couple of other women there, too. I remember being surprised to see Tremita because I knew she had some little ones. I don't think those other women had young children."
"Tremita has 6 children, the youngest little more than a 1 year. The oldest sister, Lanoga, takes care of them, and she's barely an 11-year herself,"
Ayla said, trying to contain herself, but her irritation was obvious.
"I think her brother, Bolagan, tries to help, but he's only a 13-year. They were trying to put up a tent for themselves last night when we walked past on our way here, but it was wet and falling apart, and they didn't have any materials for a summer lodge. So we stayed and built one for them."
"You built a summer lodge by yourselves, with nothing but local materials?"
Tishona said, looking at them with awe.
"It was a small one," Jandalar said with a smile. "Just enough for their family. No one is sharing with them."
"I'm not surprised," Lavila said, "but it is a shame. Those youngsters could use someone to help."
"The cave helps,"
Tishona said in defense of the Ninth Cave, of which she was now a member. "The other mothers even take turns nursing the baby."
"I was wondering about that when you said Tremita didn't return and the youngest was little more than a 1 year,"
Lavila said.
"Tremita ran dry 1 year ago,"
Ayla said. It happens when you don't nurse enough, she thought, but didn't say it aloud. There were reasons, sometimes good ones, for a mother's milk to dry up. She recalled when she had grieved so much after the death of her clan mother, Issa, that she was oblivious to the needs of her own son. The other nursing mothers of Brun's clan had been willing to feed Dirk, but in her heart she would never quite get over it. The other women of the clan understood more than she that it was as much Kreb's fault as anyone's. When Dirk cried to be fed, instead of putting him in his grieving mother's arms and letting him rouse her, he brought the baby to one of the other women to be fed. They knew he meant well. He hadn't wanted to disturb Ayla in her sorrow, and they couldn't refuse him. But the lack of nursing had made her sick with milk fever, and by the time she recovered, she was dry. Ayla held the baby girl in her arms a little closer.
"There you are, Ayla,"
Proliva said as she approached. She had 4 other women with her. Ayla recognized Belladora and Javina, the mates of the leaders of the 2nd and 7th caves, and nodded at them. They acknowledged her as well. She wondered if the other 2 women were also the mates of leaders. She thought she recognized one of them. The other was drawing back from Wolf.
"Zelandani has been looking for you," Proliva continued, "and several young men have been asking about you, Jandalar. I told them if I saw you, I'd tell you to meet them at Manvalar's lodge in the camp of the 3rd cave."
Proliva, where is the Zelandania Lodge?
Ayla asked.
Not far from the Third Cave's camp, right next to the camp of the 26th Cave,
Proliva said, pointing in the general direction.
I didn't know the 26th had set up a camp,
Jondalar said.
Stevedal likes to be in the middle of things, Proliva said. His whole cave isn't staying at the meeting camp, but there are a couple of lodges for those who happen to stay late and want a place to sleep. I'm sure there will be a lot of coming and going, at least until after the first matrimonial.
When will that be?
Jondalar asked.
I don't know. I don't think they've decided yet. Maybe Ayla can ask Zelandani,
Proliva said, as she and the women with her continued on to wherever they were heading when she stopped to pass on the messages. Ayla and Jondalar said their farewells and headed toward the camps to which they had been directed. When they neared the camp of the Third Cave, Ayla recognized the large Zelandania Lodge with its ancillary lodges close by. Right now, she thought, recalling the summer meeting of the year before, the young women who were being prepared for their rites of first pleasures were cloistered in one of the special dwellings, while appropriate men were being selected for them. In the other lodge were the women who had decided to wear the red fringe to be Dunyi women this season. They had chosen to make themselves available to the young men who were wearing puberty belts to teach them how to understand a woman's needs. Pleasures were a gift from the mother, and the Zelandania considered it a sacred duty to make sure the first experience of young adults was appropriate and educational. It was felt that both young women and young men needed to learn how to appreciate the mother's great gift properly, and that older, more experienced people needed to demonstrate and explain, to share the gift with them the first time under the discreet but watchful eyes of the Zelandania. It was a rite of passage too important to be left to chance encounters. Both ancillary lodges were very well guarded, since most men found them almost irresistible. Some men couldn't even look in the direction of either lodge without feeling aroused. Men, especially young men who had already had their manhood rites but were not yet mated, tried to peek in and sometimes sneak into the lodge of the young women, and some older men liked to hover around it in hopes of catching a glimpse. Nearly every available man wanted to be selected for a young woman's first rites, though there was also a certain anxiety involved if they were. They knew they would be observed, and they feared they might not perform well, but there was also a special sense of satisfaction when they did. Most men also had exciting memories of their own Danyi women when they first became men, but there were restrictions imposed on those who had the important task of sharing and teaching the mother's gift of pleasure. Neither the selected men nor the Danyi women were to have any close ties with the younger ones for a year after the ceremony. They were considered too impressionable, too vulnerable, and not without reason. It wasn't unusual for a young woman who had had a pleasurable first experience with an older man to want to share it again, even though it was forbidden. After first rites, she could have any other man she wanted, who also wanted her, but that made her first partner all the more appealing. Jondalar had been chosen often before he went on his journey, and he had learned to gently evade sometimes persistent young women with whom he'd shared a loving and tender ceremonial experience who tried to get him alone. But it was, in a sense, easier for the men. Theirs was a single event, one night of special pleasure. The Danyi women were expected to be available for the entire summer or more, especially if they were acolytes. Young men had frequent urges, and it took a while for them to learn that the needs of women were different, their satisfactions more varied. But the Danyi women were required to make sure that the young men didn't form a lasting attachment, which was sometimes difficult. Jondalar's Danyi woman was the first, when she was known as Zolina, and she had taught him well. Later, after he returned to the Ninth Cave after spending several years with Dalinar,
he was often chosen, but at the time of his puberty, he became so enamored of Zolina, he would choose none of the other Danyi women. More, he wanted her to be his mate, even though there was an age difference. The difficulty was that she also developed strong feelings for the tall, handsome, extremely charismatic young man with the pale blonde hair and unusually vivid blue eyes, and that had created problems for both of them. When they reached Manvalar's lodge, they knocked on a wood panel near the entrance, and speaking in a louder voice, said who they were. He called to them to come in.
"Wolf is with us," Ayla said.
"Bring him in," Morazan said as he pushed open the door drape.
Ayla hadn't seen much of Manvalar's son since the lion hunt, and she smiled cordially at him. After everyone had been greeted, Ayla said,
"I need to go to the Zelindania Lodge. Could you keep Wolf, Jandalar? Sometimes he creates such a distraction, he disrupts things. I like to ask Zelindani first, before I bring him there."
"If no one minds," Jandalar said, giving Morazan and Manvalar and the others in the lodge a questioning look. "It's fine. He can stay," Manvalar said.
Ayla stooped down and looked at the animal.
"Stay with Jandalar," she said, making the hand signal at the same time.
He nosed the baby and made her giggle, then sat down. Whining with concern, he anxiously watched her as she and the baby left, but he didn't follow her. When she reached the imposing lodge of the Zelindania, she tapped on the panel and said,
"It's Ayla."
"Come in,"
she heard the familiar voice of the first among those who served the Great Earth Mother say. The drape covering the opening was pushed aside by a male acolyte, and Ayla stepped in. Though oil lamps were burning, it was dark inside, and she stood without moving for a while, waiting for her eyes to adjust. When she could finally see where she was going, she saw a group of people sitting near the large figure of the first.
"Come join us, Ayla," she said.
She had waited before speaking, knowing how the darkness inside left people momentarily blinded. As Ayla headed toward them, John Ayla started fussing. The change in lighting had disconcerted the baby. A couple of acolytes made a space for her, and she sat down between them, but before she could focus her attention on the proceedings inside, she had to settle her child. Thinking that she might be hungry, she exposed her breast and brought the baby to it. Everyone waited. She was the only one there with a child, and she wondered if she had interrupted something important. But she had been given a message that Zelindani wanted to see her. When John Ayla settled down, the first said,
"I'm glad to see you here, Ayla. We didn't see you last night."
"No, we didn't make it to the meeting camp," she said.
Some of the people who hadn't met her before were surprised at the way she said certain words. It made them curious. It wasn't like anything they had heard before. They had no trouble understanding her. She knew the language well and had a pleasing, low-pitched voice, but it was unusual.
"Were you or the baby not feeling well?" the first asked.
"No, we were fine. Jandalar and I went to check on the horses, and on our way back we saw Lenoga and Bolagan trying to build a shelter. They didn't have any materials for a lodge, and were trying to put up the tent poles. We stayed and built a lodge for them."
The first frowned.
"Where were Tremida and Larimar?"
"Lenoga said they argued. Larimar left, saying he was going to stay in a falage. Tremida went after him, and neither one returned. Janida just told me that she saw Tremida last night with some men who were drinking barma and gaming. I guess she got distracted," Ayla said.
"So it would seem,"
the Zelindani of the Ninth Cave said. Though she was first, she was still responsible for the well-being of her cave.
"The children have a place now?"
"You built them an entire lodge?" said a man who was a stranger to Ayla.
"Not as big as this one,"
Ayla said with a smile, waving her hand to indicate the especially large shelter of the Zelandania. John Ayla seemed to have had enough. She let go, and Ayla picked her up, put her over her shoulder, and started patting her back.
They aren't sharing with anyone, so it just had to be big enough for the family, the children, and Tremida and Larimar, if he decides to come back.
How nice of you,
someone said. The tone sounded rather derisive. Ayla looked and saw that it was Zelandani of the 14th who had spoken, an older, rather skinny woman whose thin hair always seemed to be falling out of her bun. Ayla noticed that Madraman, who was sitting near the 14th along with the Zelandani of the 5th cave, turned to look at her with a condescending expression. He was the one whose front teeth Jondalar had knocked out in a fight when they were younger. She knew that Jondalar didn't like him, and she suspected the feeling was mutual. She didn't much care for him either. With her ability to interpret nuances of attitude and expression, she always felt a certain deceit in his manner, a falseness in his smiling greetings, a lack of sincerity in his offers of welcome and friendliness, but she had always tried to treat him politely.
Ayla has taken a special interest in the children of that family, the first said, careful to keep the exasperation out of her voice.
The Zelandani of the 14th had been an annoyance ever since she became first, always trying to provoke someone, particularly her. The woman had felt she was next in line and expected to be made first. She never quite got over the fact that the younger Zelandani of the 9th had been chosen instead.
"It seems they need it," said the same man who had commented earlier.
John Ayla had fallen asleep on her shoulder. Ayla took her carrying blanket and spread it out on the ground. The young acolyte on her right moved over to make room. Then she put her infant down on it.
"Yes, they do,"
the first was saying, shaking her head. Then she realized that Ayla didn't know the man, and though he had no doubt heard of her, he had not met her.
"I don't think everyone here has met my new acolyte. Perhaps some introductions would be in order."
"What happened to Jonakul?"
Zelandani of the 5th cave asked.
"He moved to the 19th cave," the first said. "The white hollow that was found last year enticed him. He always was more artist than acolyte, but he's serious about the Zelandania now. He wants to be sure that whatever is done with the new cave is appropriate. No, more than that, he wants it to be right. That white cave has called him now more than any training could have done."
"Where are the 19th cave? Are they coming this year?"
"I believe they are, but they haven't arrived yet," the one who was first said. "I will be glad to see Jonakul. I miss his skills, but fortunately Ayla arrived with many skills of her own. She is already a fine healer and brings some very interesting knowledge and techniques. I am pleased she has begun training. Ayla, will you stand so I can introduce you formally?"
Ayla got up and took a few steps to stand beside the first, who waited until everyone was looking at them, then said,
"May I present to you Ayla of the Zelandani, mother of John Ayla, blessed of Dani, acolyte of the Zelandani of the 9th cave, the one who is first among those who serve the Great Earth Mother. She is mated to Jondalar, son of Marthona, former leader of the 9th cave, and brother to Joharan, present leader. Formerly, she was a Mamutoi of the Lion Camp, the mammoth hunters who live far to the east, and an acolyte of Mamut, who adopted her as daughter of the Mammoth Hearth, which is their Zelandania. She was also chosen and physically marked by the spirit of the cave lion, her totem, and is protected by the spirit of the cave bear. She is a friend of the horses, Winnie and Racer, and the new filly, Gray, and the four-legged hunter she calls Wolf."
Ayla thought it was a very comprehensive reciting of her names and ties, complete with explanations. She didn't know if she was actually an acolyte of Mamut,
but he had adopted her to the mammoth hearth, and he was training her. The Danyar hadn't mentioned that she had also been adopted by the clan, whom they called Flatheads. The only reference was that she was protected by the spirit of the cave bear. Ayla doubted if Zelandani fully understood that it meant she was one of them. She was clan. At least she was, until Braud disowned her, cursed her, and made her leave. The man who had spoken earlier approached Ayla and the first.
"I am Zelandani of the 26th cave, and in the name of Dani, I welcome you to this summer meeting camp that we are hosting."
He held out both hands. Ayla took his hands.
"In the name of the Great Mother of All, I greet you, Zelandani of the 26th cave," she said.
"We have found a new deep hollow. It has wonderful resonance when we sing, but it is very small," the man said.
He was obviously quite excited about it.
"One must crawl in like a snake, and it is best for only one or perhaps two people, though three or four could go in. I think it is too small for the first, I am sorry to say, though I would certainly let her make that decision. I promised Jonakul I would show it to him when he came. Since you are now the first acolyte, Ayla, perhaps you would like to see it too."
The invitation caught her by surprise, but she smiled, then said,
"Yes, I would like to see it."
Chapter 7. The Zelandani who was first had mixed feelings upon hearing about the new cave, new discoveries of hollows that were likely to be entries to the mother's sacred underworld were always exciting, but the thought that she might be excluded for purely physical reasons was disappointing, though the idea of crawling on her belly into a small space was not exactly appealing anymore. It did, however, please her that Ayla was accepted enough to be offered the opportunity in her place. She hoped it meant that her choice of a newcomer as an acolyte was already taken for granted. Of course, having a woman with such obviously unusual powers safely under the authority of the Zelandania was probably a relief to many. That she was also an inherently normal and attractive young mother made her acceptance easier.
"That is an excellent idea, Zelandani of the 26th cave. I had planned to begin her Danyar tour later this summer, after the first matrimonial and rites of first pleasures ceremonies. A visit to a new sacred hollow could be an early introduction and give her a chance to understand from the beginning how sacred sites are known to the Zelandania," the first Danyar said. "And while we are talking about introductions and training, I notice several of the newer acolytes here. This seems a good time to reveal some knowledge they will need to know. Who can tell me how many seasons there are?"
"I can," said a young man. "There are three."
"No," said a young woman. "There are five."
The first smiled.
"One of you says three, another says five. Can anyone tell me which is correct?"
No one spoke for a while. Then the acolyte next to Ayla on the left said,
"I think both are."
The first smiled again.
"You are correct. There are both three and five seasons, depending upon how you count them. Can anyone tell me why?"
No one spoke up. Ayla remembered some of Mahmut's teachings, but she felt somewhat shy and hesitant to speak. Finally, when the silence grew awkward, she said,
"The Mahmutoi also have both three and five seasons. I don't know about the Zelandani, but I can tell you what Mahmut told me."
"I think that would be quite interesting," the first said,
looking around and seeing nods of agreement from others of the Zelandania.
"The downward-pointing triangle is a very important symbol to the Mahmutoi," Ayla began. "It is the symbol of a woman, and it is made with three lines. So, three is the number of the power of, I don't quite know the word, motherhood, giving birth, creating new life, and very sacred to Mut, to the mother. Mahmud also said the three sides of a triangle represent the three major seasons, spring, summer, and winter. But the Mamutoi recognize two additional seasons, the ones that signal change, fall and midwinter, making five seasons. Mahmud said five is the mother's hidden power number.
Not only were the young acolytes surprised and interested, the older Zelindani were fascinated by what she said. Even those who had met her the year before and had heard her talk noticed the way she spoke, her accent. To those who were seeing her for the first time, especially if they were young and had not traveled much, her voice seemed absolutely exotic. For most of the Zelindania, she had spoken of information unknown to them, but that essentially agreed with their way of thinking, which tended to confirm their own beliefs. That gave her added credence and an element of prestige. She was traveled, knowledgeable, but not really threatening.
I didn't realize the ways of the mother were so similar, even from such a great distance, said Zelindani of the Third. We also speak of three main seasons, spring, summer, and winter, but most people recognize five, spring, summer, autumn, early winter, and late winter. We also understand that the inverted triangle represents woman, and that three is the number of generative power, but five is a more powerful symbol.
That is true. The ways of the Great Earth Mother are remarkable, the first said. Then she continued with the instruction. We talked about the counting word five before, the five parts of an apple, five fingers on each hand, five toes on each foot, and how to use the hands and counting words in a more powerful way. There are also five primary or sacred colors. All other colors are aspects of the main colors. The first color is red. It is the color of blood, the color of life. But just as life does not last, the color red seldom stays true for long. As blood dries, it darkens, becomes brown, sometimes very dark. Brown is an aspect of red, sometimes called old red. It is the color of the trunks and branches of many trees. The red ochres of the earth are the dried blood of the mother. And though some can be very bright, almost new-looking, they are all considered old red. Some flowers and fruits show the true color of red, but flowers are ephemeral, as is the red color of fruits. When red fruits, such as strawberries, are dried, they turn to old red. Can you think of anything else that is red, or an aspect of it?
Some people have brown hair, said an acolyte sitting behind Ayla.
And some people have brown eyes, Ayla said.
I've never seen anyone with brown eyes. The eyes of everyone I know are blue or gray, sometimes with a little green, said the young male acolyte who had spoken earlier.
The people of the clan who raised me all had brown eyes, Ayla said. They thought my eyes were strange, perhaps even weak, because they were so light.
You are talking about flatheads, aren't you? They're not really people. Other animals have brown eyes, and a lot of them have brown fur, he said.
Ayla felt her anger flare.
How can you say that? The clan are not animals. They are people, she said through gritted teeth. Have you ever even seen one?
The first jumped in to quell the incipient disruption. Acolyte of the Zelindani of the 29th Cave, it is true that some people have brown eyes. You are young and obviously inexperienced. That is one reason that before you become a full Zelindani, you need to make a Danyar tour. When you travel south, you will meet some people with brown eyes. But perhaps you should answer her question. Have you ever seen the animal you call a flathead? She said.
Well, no, but everyone says they look like bears, the young man said.
When she was a child, Ayla lived among the ones that the Zelindani know as flatheads,
but that she calls the clan. They saved her life after she lost her parents. They took care of her, raised her. I think she has more experience with them than you. You also might ask Willemar, the trade master, who has had more contact with them than most. He says they may look a little different, but they behave like people, and he believes they are. Until you have had some direct contact yourself, I think you should defer to those who have had personal experience with them, the first said, in a stern, lecturing tone. The young man felt a flare of anger. He didn't like being lectured, and he didn't like that the ideas of a foreigner should be given more credence than those he had heard all his life. But after his Zelandani signaled with a shake of his head, he decided not to dispute the one who was first among those who served the great Earth Mother. Now, we were speaking of the five sacred colors. Zelandani of the 14th cave, why don't you tell us about the next one? The first said.
The second primary color is green, the Zelandani of the 14th began. Green is the color of leaves and grass. It is also a color of life, of course, plant life. In winter, you will see that many trees and plants are brown, showing that their true color is old red, the color of life. In winter, the plants are only resting, gathering strength for their new green growth in spring. With their flowers and fruits, plants also show most of the other colors.
Ayla thought her delivery was flat, and if the information itself had not been so interesting, she could make it seem dull. No wonder the rest of the Zelandania didn't select her to be first. Then Ayla wondered if she just thought that, because she knew how much the woman annoyed her Zelandani. Perhaps the Zelandani whose cave is hosting this summer meeting would tell us about the next sacred color, the first interjected, just as the 14th was taking a breath to continue. The 14th couldn't really object under the circumstances.
Yes, of course, he said. The third primary color is yellow, the color of the sun, Bali, and the color of fire, although there is also much red in both, which shows that they have a life of their own. You can see the red in the sun, mostly in the morning and in the evening. The sun gives us light and warmth, but it can be dangerous. Too much sun can make skin burn and dry out plants and watering holes. We have no control over the sun. Not even Dani, the mother, could control her son, Bali. We can only try to protect ourselves from him, get out of his way. Fire can be even more dangerous than the sun. We do have some control of it, and it is very useful, but we should never get careless with fire, nor take it for granted. Not all things that are yellow are hot. Some soil is yellow. There is yellow ochre, as well as red ochre. Some people have yellow hair, he said, looking directly at Ayla. And, of course, many flowers show its true color. They always age to brown, which is an aspect of red. It is for that reason that some argue that yellow should be considered an aspect of red and not a sacred color in its own right. But most agree that it is a primary color that attracts red, the color of life. Ayla found herself fascinated by the Zelandani of the 26th cave and observed him more closely. He was tall, muscular, with dark blonde, almost brown hair with streaks of lighter color and dark eyebrows that blended into his Zelandani tattoo on his left forehead. The tattoo was not quite as ornate as some, but very precise. His beard was brown with a reddish tone, but small and with a distinct shape. She thought he must use a sharp flint blade to trim it, to keep it that way. He was probably approaching middle age. His face had some character, but he seemed young and vibrant and quietly in control. She thought most people would think that he was handsome. She did, though she didn't fully trust her sense of who was attractive to her own kind of people, the others, to the clan.
Her perception of who looked good was strongly influenced by the standards of the people who raised her. She thought people of the clan were handsome, but most of the others did not, though many had never seen any, and most of those who had only seen them from a distance. She watched some of the young women acolytes and decided that they were attracted to the man who was speaking. Some of the older women seemed to be, too. In any case, he was very good at communicating the lore. The first seemed to agree. She asked him to continue.
"The fourth primary color is clear," he said. "Clear is the color of the wind, the color of water. Clear can show all colors, as when you look in a still pond and see a reflection, or when drops of rain sparkle in all colors when the sun comes out. Both blue and white are aspects of clear. When you look at wind, it is clear, but when you look into the sky, you see blue. Water in a lake or in the great waters of the west is often blue, and the water seen on glaciers is a deep, vivid blue.
Like Jondalar's eyes, Ayla thought. She remembered when they were crossing the glacier that it was the only time she saw a blue color that matched his eyes. She wondered if the Zelandani of the 26th cave had ever been on a glacier.
"Some fruit is blue," he was saying, "especially berries, and some flowers, although blue flowers are more rare. Many people have blue eyes, or blue mixed with gray, which is also an aspect of clear. Snow is white, as are clouds in the sky, or gray when they are mixed with dark to make rain, but their true color is clear. Ice is clear, though it may appear white, but you know the true color of snow and ice as soon as they melt, and clouds when they rain. There are many white flowers, and one can find white earth in certain places. There's a location not far from the ninth cave where white earth, kaolin, can be found," he said, looking directly at Ayla. "But it is still an aspect of clear."
The Zelandani who was first picked up the lecture. "The fifth sacred color is dark, sometimes called black. It is the color of night, the color of charcoal after fire has burned the life out of the wood. It is the color that overcomes the color of life, red, especially as it ages. Some have said that black is the darkest shade of old red, but it is not. Dark is the absence of light and the absence of life. It is the color of death. It does not even have an ephemeral life. There are no black flowers. Deep caves show the primary color of dark in its truest form." When she finished, she stopped and looked at the assembled acolytes. "Are there any questions?" she said. There was a diffident silence, some shifting and shuffling, but no one spoke out. She knew there probably were questions, but no one wanted to be first or appear not to understand if everyone else did or seemed to. It was all right. Questions could come later, and would. Since so many of the acolytes were there and she had their attention, the first wondered if she should continue with the instruction. Too much at one time was hard to retain, and people's minds could wander. "Would you like to hear more?" Ayla glanced at her baby and noticed that she was still asleep.
"I would," she said softly.
There were other murmurs and sounds from the group, most of them positive.
"Would someone like to talk about another way that we know five is a powerful symbol?"
The one who was first asked.
"One can see five wandering stars in the sky," said the old Zelandani of the seventh cave.
"That is true,"
the first said, smiling at the tall, elderly man, then announced to the rest,
"And Zelandani of the seventh cave is the one who discovered them and showed them to us. It takes time to see them, and most of you won't until your year of nights."
"What is the year of nights?" Ayla asked.
There were several others who were glad she did.
"It is the year when you will have to stay awake at night and sleep during the day," the first replied.
It is one of the trials you will face in your training. But it is more than that. There are certain things you need to see that can only be seen at night, like where the sun rises and sets, especially during midsummer and midwinter, when the sun stops and changes direction, and the risings and settings of the moon. The Zelandani of the fifth cave is the one who knows most about that. He made notations for half a year to keep track. Ayla wanted to ask what other trials she would have to face in her training, but didn't speak up. She guessed she would find out soon enough. "What else shows us the power of five?" the first asked.
"The five sacred elements," the Zelandani of the 26th said.
"Good," the large woman who was first said. She shifted to a more comfortable position on her seat. "Why don't you begin?"
"It is always best to talk about the sacred colors before the sacred elements, because color is one of their properties. The first element, sometimes called a principle or essential, is earth. Earth is solid. It has substance. It is soil and rock. You can pick up a piece of earth with your hand. The color most associated with earth is old red. As well as being an element in its own right, earth is the material aspect of all the other essentials. It can hold them or be affected by them in some way," he said, then looked toward the first to see if she wanted him to continue. She was already looking at someone else.
"Zelandani of the second cave, why don't you continue?"
"The second element is water," she said, standing up. "Water sometimes falls from the sky, sometimes rests on the surface of the earth, or flows across it, or through it, in caves. Sometimes it is absorbed and becomes part of the earth. Water is movable. The color of water is usually clear or blue, even when it looks muddy. When water is brown, it is because you're seeing the color of earth, which has mixed with water. Water can be seen and felt and swallowed, but you cannot pick it up with your fingers, though your hand can make a cup for it," she said, holding her two hands together to form a cup. Ayla enjoyed watching her, because she used her hands a lot when she was describing things, although it wasn't intentional the way the clan would have. "Water must be held in something, a cup, a water bag, your own body. Your body needs to hold water, as you will find out when you go through your trial of giving it up. All living things need water, plants and animals," the second finished and sat down.
"Would anyone else like to say something about water?" the leader of the Zelandania asked.
"Water can be dangerous. People can drown in it," said the young acolyte sitting on the other side of Janela. She spoke softly and looked sad, and Ayla wondered if she had personal knowledge of what she spoke.
"That's true," Ayla said. "On our journey, Jandalar and I had to cross many rivers. Water can be very dangerous."
"Yes, I knew someone who broke through the ice on a river and drowned," said the Zelandani of South Face of the 29th Cave. He started to embellish the story about drowning, but the main Zelandani of the 29th interrupted and cut him short.
"We understand water can be very dangerous, but so can wind, and that is the third element." She was very pleasant, with a nice smile, but an underlying strength, and she knew this was not a time for a digression into anecdotes. The first was discussing a serious matter with important information that needed to be understood. The first smiled at her, knowing exactly what she had done.
"Why don't you continue to tell us about the third element?" she said.
"Like water, wind cannot be picked up, nor can it be held or seen, though its effects can be seen," she said. "When wind is still, it cannot even be felt. But wind can be so powerful it can pick up trees and knock them over. It can blow so hard you can't move against it. Wind is everywhere. There is no place that you won't find it, not even in the deepest cave, though it is usually still there. You know it is present because you can make it move by flapping something. Wind also moves inside a living body. It can be felt when you suck in your breath and when you blow it out. Wind is essential for life. People and animals need wind to live. When their wind stops, you know they are dead.
The Zelandani of the 29th cave ended. Ayla noticed that John Ayla was beginning to squirm. She would be waking up soon. The first was aware of the baby, too, and an air of restlessness in the assembly. It was necessary to finish this session soon.
The fourth element is cold, the first continued. Like wind, cold cannot be picked up or held, but it can be felt. Cold causes changes, makes things harder and slower. Cold can harden the earth, and cold can harden water, turn it into ice and make it stop moving, and turn rain into snow or ice. The color of cold is clear or white. Some say that dark causes cold. It does get cooler when the dark of night comes. Cold can be dangerous. Cold can help dark to drain life, but dark is unaffected by cold, so things that are partly dark are less affected by cold. Cold can be helpful, too. If food is put into a cold pit in the earth or in water covered with ice, cold can stop it from going bad. When cold stops, things that are clear can usually go back to the way they were, like ice back to water. Old red things or elements can usually recover from cold, the earth, the bark of trees, for example, but green, yellow, or true red seldom do. The first thought about asking for questions, but decided to hurry through. The fifth element is heat. Heat cannot be picked up or held, but it too can be felt. You know when you touch something hot. Heat also changes things, but where cold makes slow changes, heat is quick. As cold drains life, heat and warmth can restore it, bring it back. Fire and sun can make heat. The heat from the sun softens the cold, hard earth and turns snow to rain, which helps green life sprout. It turns ice to water and helps it move again. The heat of fire can cook food, both meat and vegetables, and warm the inside of a dwelling. But heat can be dangerous. It can also help dark. The primary color of heat is yellow, often mixed with red, but sometimes it is mixed with dark. Heat can help the true red of life, but too much heat can encourage the dark that destroys life. The first's timing was just about right. Just as she finished, John Ayla woke up with a loud wail. Ayla quickly picked her up, rocked and bounced her to settle her, but knew she needed to be tended to. I want all of you to think about what you have learned today and remember any questions you may have so we can talk about them the next time we meet like this. Any of you who wish to leave can go now, the one who was first concluded.
I hope we will be able to meet again soon, Ayla said as she stood up. This was very interesting. I'm looking forward to learning more.
I'm glad, acolyte of the Zelandani of the Ninth Cave, the first said.
Though Zelandani called her Ayla when they were in a more casual situation, she always referred to everyone by formal titles when they were in the Zelandania Lodge at summer meetings.
Proliva, I need to ask you something, Ayla said, feeling uncomfortable. Go ahead, Ayla.
All of the people who shared the dwelling were eating their morning meal and turned toward her, their expressions full of curiosity.
There is a sacred cave not far from the home of the 26th cave, and their Zelandani has asked me to go with him to see it, since I am the first's acolyte. It is very small, and the first would like me to go to represent her.
Jandalar was not the only one whose attention was piqued.
He glanced around and noticed that everyone was watching Ayla and saw Willemar shudder. The trademaster loved to travel great distances, but didn't much care for small, cramped spaces. He could make himself go into a cave if it was necessary, especially if it wasn't too small, but he preferred the open outdoors.
"I need someone to watch Janela and feed her if she needs it," Ayla explained. "I'll make sure she nurses before I leave, but I'm not sure how long it will take. I would take her with me, but I'm told one must crawl in like a snake, and I don't think I could do that with Janela. I think Zelandani is pleased that I was asked."
Proliva thought for a moment. She was always busy at summer meetings. The ninth was a large and important cave, and she had many things planned for that day. She didn't know if she had time to take care of another baby besides her own, but she hated to refuse.
"I'd be glad to feed her, Ayla, but I have promised to meet with some people today, and I don't think I will be able to take care of her."
"I have an idea," Marthona said. Everyone turned to look at the former leader. "Perhaps we can find someone to go with Proliva to watch both Janela and Sathona while she is busy and bring the babies to her when they need feeding." Marthona looked hard at Falara, then surreptitiously poked her, wanting her to volunteer. The girl understood the message and had thought about it even before, but wasn't sure if she wanted to spend a whole day taking care of the babies. On the other hand, she did love them both dearly, and it might be interesting to see what Proliva was going to be talking about at her meetings.
"I'll watch them," she said.
Then, in a moment of inspiration, she added,
"If Wolf will help me."
That would bring her a lot of attention. Ayla paused to think. She wasn't entirely sure if Wolf would obey the young woman in the middle of the meeting area in the midst of so many strangers, though he would probably love to be around the little girls. Adult wolves, aunts and uncles, were devoted to their young and happily took turns watching them while the rest of the pack hunted, but a pack could not raise more than one litter. They had to hunt not only for themselves, but for several growing and hungry young wolves. To supplement nursing and to help wean the litter, the hunters brought back meat they had chewed and swallowed, regurgitating the partially digested food, making it easier for the pups to eat. It was the job of the alpha female to make sure no other females of the pack mated when they come into season, often interrupting her own mating to drive males away from them, so that her litter would be the one that was born and raised. Wolf bestowed his normal wolfish adoration on the human babies of his pack. Ayla had observed and studied wolves when she was young, which was why she understood Wolf so well. As long as no one threatened the little ones, it was unlikely he would cause any trouble, and who would threaten them in the middle of a summer meeting?
"All right, Falara," Ayla said. "Wolf can help you watch the babies. But Jandalar, will you check on Wolf and Falara once in a while? I think he will mind her, but he may get too protective of the little ones and not want to let anyone near them. He always does what you say when I'm not around."
"I was going to stay close to our camp and nap some tools this morning," he said. "I still owe special ones to some people for helping me build our dwelling at the ninth cave. There is a napping area at the edge of the meeting camp, and it is paved with stones, so it won't be muddy. I can work there and go to see how Falara and Wolf are doing occasionally. I did promise to meet with some people in the afternoon. After the lion hunt, many more are interested in the spear thrower."
His forehead wrinkled in a familiar frown as he thought about it.
"But maybe we can meet where I can keep an eye on them."
"I hope we'll be back by afternoon, but I don't know how long the cave visit will take," Ayla said.
They all headed for the main encampment not long after, separating to go to their individual destinations when they reached the site. Ayla and Proliva, with their two babies, Folara, Jandalar, and the wolf all went to the large Zelandania dwelling first. The Danya of the 26th cave was already there, waiting outside, and an acolyte Ayla had not seen for some time.
Jonokol,
she said, rushing toward the man who had been the first acolyte before her and was considered one of the finest artists of the Zelandanyi.
When did you arrive? Have you seen Zelandanyi yet?
She asked, after they had embraced and touched cheeks.
We got here just before dark last night, he said. The 19th cave got off to a late start, and then the rain slowed us down. And yes, I have seen the first among those who serve the mother. She's looking wonderful.
The other members of the 9th cave warmly greeted the man who had been, until recently, a valued member of their cave and a good friend. Even Wolf sniffed him in recognition and was given a scratch behind the ears in return.
Are you Zelandani yet?
Proliva asked.
If I pass the testing, I may be at this summer meeting. Zelandani of the 19th is not well. She didn't come this year. She just couldn't walk so far.
I'm sorry to hear that, Ayla said. I was looking forward to seeing her.
She has been a good teacher, and I've been performing many of her tasks. Tormadon and the cave would like me to take on the rest of the functions as soon as possible, and I think our Zelandani wouldn't mind either,
Jonokol said. Then, looking at the bundles Ayla and Proliva had in their carrying blankets, he added,
I see you have your little ones. I heard you both had girls, the blessed of Dani. I am happy for you. May I see them?
Of course,
Proliva said, taking her infant out of her carrying blanket and holding her up.
Her name is Sethona. And here is Janela,
Ayla said, holding up her child as well.
They were born within a few days of each other, and they are going to be great friends, Folara said. I'm taking care of them today, and Wolf is going to help me.
You are, Jonokol said. Then he looked at Ayla. I understand we're going to visit a new sacred cave this morning.
Are you coming with us, too? How wonderful,
Ayla said. Then she looked at the Zelandani of the 26th cave.
Do you have any idea how long it will take? I would like to be back by afternoon.
We should be back sometime in the afternoon, he said.
He had been observing the reunion of the artist acolyte and his former cave and their interactions. He had wondered how Ayla was going to handle visiting a difficult cave with a young baby and quickly understood that she had made arrangements for the care of her infant, which was wise. He wasn't the only one who wondered how a young mother was going to take on the full duties of a Zelandani. Apparently with the help of family and friends in the 9th cave, there was a reason that few in the Zelandania chose to mate and have a family. In a couple of years, when the child was weaned, it would be easier for her, unless she was blessed again. It would be interesting to watch the development of this young and attractive acolyte, he thought. Saying she would be back soon, Ayla left with the others from the 9th cave to go with Proliva to her meeting. The Zelandani of the 26th cave sauntered after them. She tried to nurse Janela, but the child was satisfied and smiled at her mother while the milk dribbled out of the corner of her mouth, then struggled to sit up. Ayla handed the baby over to Folara and then stood in front of the wolf and tapped herself just under her shoulders. The animal jumped up, putting his large paws where she had tapped as she braced herself to support his weight. The demonstration that followed made people who hadn't seen it before stare in shocked disbelief. Ayla lifted her chin and exposed herself to the huge wolf. With great gentleness, he licked her neck, then took her tender throat in his teeth in a wolfish gesture of acknowledgement of the alpha member of his pack. She returned the gesture near his mouth, getting a mouthful of fur, then holding him by his ruff.